Hello and welcome everyone. In today's show, which is episode 6, myself and Gregor are talking to Wesley Hackman. But firstly, let's catch up on what we've been up to this week. So Gregor, what have you been up to this week?
So this week I've been doing some Azure design sessions for some new customers. I have also been, what else have I been doing? I've been looking at some auto-scaling. I need to do some Azure automation for auto-scaling a database. So at the weekend it scales down and Monday to Friday it scales back up. I'm also been still playing around with Windows containers, which are interesting. I'll leave it at that. I'm finding a little bit of difficulty with, I've got some IIS things running, but it's difficult to kind of see what's happening when there's an error. So I've had a look at a Microsoft GitHub repo called Log Monitor. So I've built that. It's a C++ DLL that you, sorry, an exe that you drop in to your container, and it gives you the logs back from things like Event Viewer and IIS, which is quite handy. So that's been interesting. And I'm actually off tomorrow, which is good. So yeah, that's pretty much what I've been up to this week. What about yourself? What have you been up to, Richard?
So again, just more handover stuff really, but also been sort of troubleshooting a few issues with Azure Blob Storage and one of our applications sort of not always connecting to the Blob Storage every time. So it's been a weird issue, but I think we're finally getting there. It's probably looks like it's just the way we're calling it via we're just calling it wrong, I think. But apart from that, just more AKS handover stuff, training on the development team on that, and lots of sysadmin training as well. 1 week left until the new job, so super excited.
Yep, exciting times, good. Must be looking forward to it.
Definitely. It's going to be a big change, but an even better change.
Cool. Okay, let's get on with the show.
So today we are joined by Wesley Hackman. Wesley is a lead Azure architect and Microsoft Azure MVP. He's also an MCT. He lives near Zwolle in the Netherlands. Welcome to the show, Wesley. How are you getting on today?
Hey, Greg and Richard. Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Despite all the Corona stuff, I'm doing really well. Enjoying the working from home, I might add. Can be challenging, but I'm really enjoying it, actually.
Good. So we're going to talk about you and your career. But to start off with, give us a brief intro into your career, because I know we're going to go deeper into that. But I see you started on a help desk. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm actually on my second job in my career right now. That might sound a bit weird, but no, I started as an intern at a healthcare organization. So as an intern on IT, doing Novell malware and Linux machines. So I started doing that, started doing first line support. And then eventually I got offered a job after my study. And I grew ever since. So from a help desk, I went to system administrator. Then of that, we migrated to Windows 2003. So we moved from Linux to Windows. Then we did Windows 2008. We started adding some Citrix stuff. And eventually I got in touch with my current employer, but I worked for 12 years at that healthcare company, which I enjoyed a lot, I might add. I think the success in your career is also largely dependent on your manager. I don't want to say boss. Boss sounds a bit dirty, but I had the best manager ever. Been working at my current company in SAP for 6 years now, but I'm still in touch weekly with my first manager.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. Yeah, I don't think I can remember my first manager in IT.
Not that old.
Yeah, no, I just think we lost contact ages ago. It was a sort of a one-man band kind of IT place. So, yeah, that's cool that you have worked just two places and still contact them. That's awesome. So have you always wanted to be working in IT, or is it sort of just calling about what you're good at?
Well, that's a good question. So I was always intrigued by IT. So I think like a lot of people who start in IT, so playing video games, have the 386 computer, you know, playing Sims, playing Formula One, had having that DOS quick menu. So I was always intrigued, but actually I always dreamed of joining the army. But I never did. I actually started studying IT because I was on the computer every day. So all the kids were playing outside. I was being that kid inside playing on the computer. That's actually where it took off. So when I was old enough to go to college, I said, well, I want to do IT.
Cool. Awesome. So a lot of buddy tells me that you've got some Linux skills that you don't really want to talk about. Tell us about your Linux skills.
Yes, yeah, so I started out as, well, the first job I did, it was a Novell and Linux environment. So we had Novell, but all the other backend systems were powered by Linux. So I did a lot. I knew nothing about Linux, and then I did that job. And it was just Linux from the start, and I really enjoyed it. Learned a lot, and then transitioning to Windows, I have to say that was difficult. Even though it was much simpler, but I missed all the open source stuff, the customization. So it was a bit of a change that I had to get used to, but eventually I did. And well, ever since Microsoft Azure, I've been a big fan of that. So when Microsoft started embracing open source, I became even a bigger fan. But yeah, I tried to leave all the Linux stuff to my other colleagues who probably enjoy it more. I really like it, and when I really get into stuff, but I think a lot of people with a Linux administration background will agree, you can really get lost in stuff. When you start doing stuff, it's cool. I really like the customization. So in my previous job, I went back home, I started installing Linux as well on my desktop. I'm not sure if you ever tried Linux on your desktop, but you could customize the terminal, stuff like that. I really enjoyed that. So probably every week I would have a new customization or I would have a new desktop too. I could spend hours on doing that. Now when I switched to Windows, it was a bit different. So I was like, well, why can I not customize that? But eventually I got more accustomed to the whole Windows thing. I got better at that. So I really left the whole Linux thing behind. And then when Microsoft embraced the open source world, got back into it a bit more, and now I've been doing Azure Kubernetes Service for the past 2 months. So I think I can say I'm pretty back into it again.
Yeah, definitely. And now Microsoft has the Windows subsystem for Linux as well. You can have the best of both worlds. Do you use WSL?
I didn't. I use Windows Terminal, use PowerShell, Core PowerShell 7. And ever since I started doing more Kubernetes, and when you read the documentation, the tutorials are all based on Azure CLI, and a lot of Azure CLI documentation is based on Linux. So what I did, I think a couple of weeks ago, I started using the Windows subsystem for Linux, WSL2, actually, more and more. And now I think if I have PowerShell open, I also have Ubuntu open as my second shell. So I use it on a daily basis now.
Yeah, that's nice. My default shell is WLinux, or Penguin as it's now called. And then I have PowerShell as my second one, or Ubuntu, and then PowerShell. So I've gone like full on Windows, and now I'm more Linux-y kind of based because of AKS as well.
I know. I started getting back into that WSL, and then I started doing the grep and the AWK and doing more with regular expressions. And after a couple of days, I was like, man, I really miss this. I really miss the command line of Linux. So I have to say, and ever since I've been doing more Azure CLI as well, because, well, Richard, as you might know, that Kubernetes and PowerShell, they're not the best friends.
No.
So I really switched over to Azure CLI. And ever since, it felt like coming back home, actually.
Cool. I know we're going to talk a lot more about AKS and containers going forward, but anytime someone mentions games, I have to ask them, when you were younger, what systems did you play games on, and what was your favorite games when you were younger?
Well, I played on the computer. I had a 386 and then a 486 and then the Pentium thing. I actually played a lot of different games. I think I even had some, was called SimCity. That was one of the big things I played, and then I quickly moved over to PlayStation and Xbox. And what I've been doing ever since is I would get a PlayStation, and then when the next gen console comes out, I would get the Xbox, and then when the next gen console comes out, I would get the PlayStation. But the last couple of years, I've been hooked to Xbox, to be honest.
Good choice.
Yeah, so this year we got the Xbox One X, the Xbox S X, or whatever it is, and then now the PS5. Which one are you going for this year?
Xbox pre-ordered. Good.
Definitely the best choice. Just gonna wait for Halo now.
Yeah, I heard that was extended.
Yeah,
it was, it's a bit upsetting. I think it's gonna be next year, I think.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a shame, but I think I'll wait until Halo's out before I pre-order my Xbox, but. Definitely will be getting one.
Yeah, I think Halo will take some time, but I think it's time for a new Halo. It's definitely time for a new one.
Yeah, number five was okay, not the best.
Mediocre at best to me.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely we need a new Halo. So apart from games and stuff like that, what else do you kind of like to do in your spare time?
I like running. So I did a lot of running before the whole pandemic, but and I've always been working from home a lot. So I think I spent about three days a week at home and then 2 days a week at the office. Sometimes I wouldn't go to the office for weeks, but then the pandemic hit and I would work from home even more. And I really had, I think what a lot of people had is that you start working more and more and more. So there is no, you pretty much lose track of your private life again. So what I did was actually schedule time for running. I was like, all right, my break. So instead of doing my 12 to 1 lunch, I would do my running and then had an additional hour of a break, because I know at the end of the day, when it's 9 p.m., I'll probably open my laptop again and do some email, because apparently everyone is doing that. So I do a lot of sports, and that's really what's helping me with working from home. So I do running, I do fitness. That's really what I enjoy, and the occasional playing of games. But to be honest, when I think I got time to play a game, work also jumps into my head. So I might just as well do some email.
Okay, Doc. So I want to go back to your career. So you started off as an intern, then you were kind of help desk, and now you're an Azure Architect, MVP, and MCT. Talk us through that kind of journey.
Yeah, so when I did that help desk job, then I went into system administration within the same company, and then I decided to do an additional study. I did business IT and management, which was a study that I did after working hours. So I would work 40 hours a week, and then after that, I would go to school. Which was quite intensive, because it was, I went to school from like 5 till 11, and then we still had to study in the weekends. But it really, I still sometimes wake up and think I have to do stuff for school. It was really an intensive 3 years, but it was also the most fun I ever had, because the other people in your class do the same thing, so you feel like you're on the same journey, right? So I did that. And then when I finished, I joined Intercept, the company I'm working for now. And I actually didn't start as a technical architect. What I my study was business IT and management, so it was really focused on being a CIO, so chief information officer. I did that at my previous job for a couple of months, but then I quickly found out that I really missed the technical stuff. But then I joined Intercept as a business consultant. So my job was to go to the company, write a business case, help them with their information management. And then Azure got big, and Azure got big really, really quick. So the company I was working for also became a customer for my current employer. So what we did was migrate them to Azure. And I wrote the financial business case and did the whole project management thing. And then what happened is that Azure Service Management, they stopped. So Azure Resource Manager became the new Azure, so Azure 2.0. So then we had to migrate. So we just moved the customer to Azure, our first customer. And then within a couple of months, there was a new Azure. So then what did we do? And Intercept was still a pretty small company. I think we were about 6 or 7 people. And I decided, well, let's do this. And that's when I got back into the technical side of things. So let's find a way to migrate from Azure Service Manager to Azure Resource Manager. There was no migration path. So what we had to do was migrate virtual machines, migrate disks, and we developed a practice, some procedures to move them from ASM to ARM. And that's what I did, and then I got so hooked onto Azure. I did the next customer as well, and the next customer as well, and I kept doing Azure, start doing the certifications when they became available. And then from a consultant, I eventually became an architect. I do have somewhat of an opinion on the title architect, because that's something I just rolled into because I was making designs for new customers as well. But I do really believe in that being an architect also means that you need to know how it works. So I will never write a design without having deployed it first. And I hope all the architects in the world do that. I know a lot of people don't do that, but I believe in we just don't draw the boxes. We know how to deploy it. We know how it works. We know how to transform something into Azure native solutions. I kind of rolled into that. And that's what I also love about my current manager. It's not about this is your function. This is what you have to do. No, we believe in, if you hire good people, they will do good stuff, whatever it is, and then it will be successful. So that's also the opportunity that I got and that I took as well. So that's how I eventually became an architect.
Yeah, a lot of good information and insight into it. I like the thought of actually deploying it before you actually give the design. That's a really good idea. Yeah,
because there's a lot. Just wish everyone did it.
Yeah, I've worked with architects in previous roles who drew the boxes, and I would always ask, when's the last time you actually had hands-on and deployed any of this? Because it was just drawing boxes, and I don't think they realised that this solution might not actually work. But the way you're doing it, you know it works, and then you're drawing the boxes, basically.
Yeah, and that's also what I really like about the new role-based certificate. Well, they're not new, they've been around for a couple of years, but that's what I like about the role-based certifications. If you do the Azure Architect certifications, you do get the labs where you actually have to deploy. So you need to understand what you're deploying and why you're deploying it. So it's not just the person drawing application A needs to talk to application B and it needs to be a web app. No, you actually need to know how to deploy a web app. And that's what I really like about those certifications.
Yeah, they're definitely good. Like you know, if someone's passing, they pretty much understand or have worked with Azure. Otherwise, they can't really pass it. You have to have that hands-on experience, which is awesome. I really like those. So I think it was this year you became an MVP as well, maybe a couple of months or so ago. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, that was February. So I've always been doing community stuff. I think a lot of my community stuff is not just blogging, but also a lot of I think pull requests on GitHub or additions to docs on Microsoft.com. And what I also do is a lot of contact with Microsoft, doing previews, doing feedback sessions. I think I've got about 3 or 4 a week, which I really enjoy because I think a lot of MVPs agree you get access to the new stuff, and that got even bigger after you become an MVP because you get more insights, you get more information, you get to test more stuff. But I've been doing that for a couple of years, and then someone from Norway, his name is Martin Ernst, he nominated me as an MVP. And I just went through the form, which was a lot of work actually, but I did that. And then after a couple of weeks, I was awarded the MVP, and I was really excited because I never really shot for the MVP title, which is, I think everyone will agree, it's not your goal, it's a reward for what you're doing. If you don't love the community work, you will probably never get it or never keep it. I think that's probably even harder. You need to have a big love for the community and want to provide people with the information, want to share everything. And I've been doing that, and it was kind of out of the blue. I never expected to be nominated. I just got a message, hey, I want to nominate you. Do you agree? I'm like, well, yeah, why not? And that's actually when I got nervous. So before that, I never thought of it, but that's when I got nervous. And then I got it, and I was really excited. I think the first day, I think I read that email like 100 times. Like, is this really true? Even before I tweeted it, you know, I'm just reading it over and over again. Is it true? Is it true? So that's, yeah, I'm really excited about that. Still excited about it.
That's awesome, man. That's to me, that's, you described what an MVP is. You're kind of doing what an MVP should be doing before they even become an MVP. I like the fact that you weren't shooting for it, and someone just nominated you for the community work that you did. And that's kind of how I feel it should be. So hats off to you for doing that. That's awesome. What's the favourite part of the job that you're doing just now? What's your favourite part when you wake up in the morning? What gets you up in the morning?
I think the different customers. Work with a lot of different customers. And that's that can be challenging. So we focus on software companies, which means that when a software company starts using Azure, you're usually dealing with developers. And what I learned in the last couple of years is that when developers really get into Azure, you need to understand development. You really need to get into Azure. So that means even though I've been doing this for a couple of years, and I also spend a lot of hours after office hours on Azure, you need to keep studying. You need to keep studying. So every day can be a challenge, and that's really what gets me up in the morning. That's what triggers me, the challenge. I always tell people, if I no longer have a challenge in my current job, I will immediately switch to a new job. It's the challenge that keeps me going.
Luckily, with Azure, it changes like nearly daily, so you always get a challenge trying to keep up with it.
Exactly, and that's what I love. So one month you're really doing. So I just spend a couple of weeks or months on dealing with the whole Azure Plan stuff. So we moved to Azure Plan, and then that sounds like a commercial thing, but it had quite a technical impact. So then you have to deep dive into that. And then I started dealing with a lot of AKS. So then I did a deep dive into that. So that's what I really love. Even though it can be chaotic because you're dealing with all different customers, I also feel that I work for a company where I can also hit the brakes if I really need to, because if I got too many customers in a week, I'll just hold on, give me a week, let me fix everything, and let me move on. But that's also what challenges me. I'm not the kind of person who can do the same customer for months over and over again.
Cool. So you just mentioned AKS again. Now, when containers and Kubernetes came out, you're an IT pro at heart. What was your thoughts behind containers? Did you think, oh no, I'm going to lose all my VMs and stuff that I manage? Or what's your thought pattern behind it?
My first thought was, oh my God, another platform to manage. That was my first thought. But then I really started seeing the benefits of OS virtualization or of containers. Of course, in the first couple of years, we had Docker Swarm, which wasn't too happy with that. And then Kubernetes became available, and that was really an eye-opener. I think ever since Kubernetes started, that's when the whole thing took off. Even though people were already running containers, you have different platform as well. But when Kubernetes started, I really got interested. And my interest was really just an interest. So I read about it. I created Docker containers just to test it, so I can talk to customers and tell them this is what containers do, this is how they work. But never really got into the details of it. So never really got into the networking parts or building the actual containers. Just, this is a Docker file, this is how you build a container. Good luck with your application. So, and then at some point, customers also started asking questions on, well, how do they really work? So can you help me Dockerize my application? And I think it's since that question, when I really started getting into it from a technical side, I started seeing more and more benefits of containerizing applications. I think what I try to tell customers when they want to use Kubernetes, or what I hear a lot is when people start using containers, they will say, well, I want to be cloud agnostic. I want to be able to deploy to different clouds. But then, then what do you want? Yeah, we want to use Kubernetes. We want to use Azure Kubernetes. But then they also want that be that cloud agnostic. But as you might know, if you really use Azure Kubernetes and you start getting into the more technical side of things and start adding features and you want to use stuff like managed identity, then that's where cloud agnostic stops.
Yep.
Because that's an Azure feature. So I really try to explain to customers that using containers is really good. It does add value. It really does help you specifically for, I think one of the biggest benefits I see in containers is the updating mechanism, what you can do, how fast you can update and how high available your application can be. Even though you have stuff like that with web apps and you can do Azure Functions and they all provide a lot of availability, I think what you can do with containers, the amount of availability you get and the amount of control you have, that's unmatched. So that's, for me, that's the real value for containers. And that's what I also try to explain customers, that is why you need or why you should want containers, and not because you want to be cloud agnostic, because at some point you're going to use those cloud specific features, which can be Azure specific features or AWS specific features or Google Kubernetes Engine specific features, and then your cloud agnostic thing will just stop. Mm-hmm. So I really try to explain that value, and that's the value I've seen when I really started getting into containers more and more.
Cool. So Wesley, we last year we met at Ignite. What was your highlight from this year's Ignite conference?
Good question. I think there were a lot of highlights. What I liked a lot is I like automation. So, and I've been doing a lot of work in the preview of Azure Automated HVM. I'm not sure if you've seen the release based on AI, it's still in preview, so it still needs a lot of work. But where Microsoft will do a lot of your VM management, I think that was a real eye-opener for me, not just because I did a lot of the preview stuff, but because what we see is when we migrate people to Azure, migrate customers to Azure, VMs was always a hard sell because it feels like rehosting or lift and shift or move and improve or whatever you want to call it, you're going to grab a problem and just move it to Azure. And it's really hard to explain the added value of virtual machines on Azure, even though you get stuff like update management, easy access to backup, you get all those benefits, it's still a hard sell because they're quite expensive. But with that auto-managed proposition, Microsoft is really showing, hey, VMs are here to stay, so it's all right to use them. It's not something that's going to disappear within the next couple of years. And we've seen that with the developments of Azure Auto-Manage for VMs. So that was probably the one that I was excited about most because I'm all about automation. I'm not about virtual machines. I really don't like virtual machines. I think they're a lot of work. But having them and being able to automatically manage them, that's what I get excited about.
Nice. Yeah, no, I need to look further into it. It looks really powerful what you can do, and it's definitely down the right track, so that's cool. So talk about conferences. What's been your favorite conference and why?
This is going to sound a bit weird. I liked Ignite from a technical perspective. Well, I really loved it. Also from a community perspective, because you get to talk to a lot of people. But I went to Ignite a couple of times. Unfortunately, it was virtual this year. Hopefully we can do that in person again. But I went to Inspire the last time in Las Vegas. And I have to say that was my favorite conference. And the reason behind that is that I always seek to connect with Microsoft engineering, with the people that can help me and that I can help. So it's also a lot about networking. And what I learned at Inspire is that despite all the sales things and all the marketing things, people are not focused on releasing a technical solution. So the people from the technical side, so from engineering or the program manager who are there, really have time to connect with you. And if you go to Ignite, with all due respect, they're always busy with releasing their new version or releasing their new feature because they've been working on that for a year. that's when they can shine. So if you've got question, they need to be about that specific feature. At Inspire, I found people to be a lot more accessible. Of course, it's a commercial event, it's for partners, but that's definitely my favorite event, not because it was in Las Vegas, but definitely because of the accessibility to connect with Microsoft people.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I've not been to Inspire. Gonna have to put it on my conference list for when we're allowed to go.
Yeah, I was a bit hesitant because my colleague would go, but he was always a bit, will he go, will he not go? He was expecting a child. And obviously, his child was born. Well, then you probably don't go. Well, you better not go to a conference at the other side of the world. So that's when I got to go. And I was a bit hesitant. I'm like, well, I'm not sure what to expect. But ever since, it's been my favorite conference.
Interesting. That's good. Cool. So changing up a little bit, what's your favorite place in the world that some people might not, never have heard of? Where have you been that's kind of really nice that we may not have heard of?
So I like luxury and hotels, but my favorite place ever was Sweden. I think many, many years ago, what I did was go to Sweden in the winter. It was like halfway Sweden. Sweden is pretty big. And it was minus 28 Celsius degrees. And we went walking on the border between Norway and Sweden, in between the mountains at night when we slept in the tent. But what I loved about it, even though it was cold, but you have good gear, so you really don't need to worry about that. But what I loved about it is when you would go out at night, there were no roads. So it was quiet. There was no sound at all. And if you go outside right now, think doesn't matter where you live, if you go outside, you will hear something somewhere. And there it was just quiet. And I really, maybe you noticed, I like talking, so I can talk forever and ever. I'm pretty, I got a lot of energy. But then it was quiet and I really enjoyed that. So that was the most special place I've ever been to. It was the border between Sweden and Norway, the mountains.
Wow, that sounds cool. I bet the skies were amazing as well, with like no light pollution or anything.
Nothing. You could see everything. There was no light pollution at all. And it was midwinter, so all you could hear was hear the ice crack in the lake. That was all you could hear.
Nice. That's amazing. I'm definitely going to have to try and find somewhere like that. That sounds awesome. No internet, no nothing, just you in nature. I love it. So we're coming to the end of the podcast now. So one question we like to ask every guest is, if you could pick anyone for us to get on the podcast next who isn't well known within the industry, who would you choose and why?
Good question. You could pick the obvious names. I would definitely, we have Gregor Molnauer. We have bi-weekly calls with Holly from Microsoft. And Holly Lehman, think people know her from Twitter. And I think she will be really good to interview, not because she's not that technical like a lot of people, but she's that kind of person who's got a heart for the community. She's got a heart for working with partners. We work with her as a company, and it's amazing. I always like to use this example. So whenever I come with a technical problem, I can talk for 50 minutes about a technical problem, and she summarizes it in two sentences. And then I'm like, well, how did you do that? And then she follows up and she gets the right people to fix it. And she's always pushing for a solution. And she does the same in the community. She's always doing stuff for people. And I think if you want to interview someone, I think she would be a really good person to interview.
Yeah, we definitely will. Trust me on that one. Definitely, there's a couple other people along with Holly, but yeah, we definitely need to speak to Holly. Cool. One more question before we finish up. So the Festive Tech Calendar, myself and Richard are running that this year. We've just put the Sessionize page live last Friday, so it's been live for a week. Are you taking part this year, Wesley? That's the main question.
The main question is if my session gets accepted. Definitely. I'm putting in my session this weekend. Definitely. We'll see. We'll see what it looks like, but I'm pretty excited about it, and I've got some plans. I'm gonna do it, and it would be good if we could do it through the Azure Festive Calendar, or the Festive Intact Calendar.
Yeah, the more festive, the better. So awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so that's all we've got time for today. So a huge big thanks for coming on the show, Wesley. It's been great fun talking to you today. I hope everyone has enjoyed today's show, and we look forward to bringing you more episodes like this one. So thanks again for coming on, Wesley.
Thank you.